From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in November of 1979 in Caledonia, Livingston County. It had been one of those ugly November stretches of weather. Gray, a cold mist, and rain, and the kind of persistent rain then that soaks everything. Well, 16-year-old Wes Clements and his father found the body of a teenage girl in a cornfield. She had been shot twice. They had no idea who she was. No one did, and no one would, for more than 35 years. This is a murder mystery, and it's the kind of crime that might have produced no answers. The girl was clearly from out of the area. The rain hadn't helped investigators. And if not for the dogged, almost obsessive work of investigators, that girl might never have been given a name, an identity. But now we know her name, and soon we might know even more about who killed her. My colleague Veronica Volk was moved by this story, and she offered to work with veteran Democrat and Chronicle reporter Gary Craig to help tell it in the form of a podcast. There are some advantages to this kind of reporting. There are no time limits on the podcast, and produced in weekly form, it allows for interaction with the listening audience because the people who know more about this crime are likely out there. Well, this week, the Finding Tammy Jo podcast has launched. The first installment is now available. You're going to hear it in just a few moments. And we're going to talk about the process of creating this podcast, all that goes into it, and what their goals are going forward. Let me welcome my guest, Gary Craig, from the Democrat and Chronicle. Hi, Gary Craig. Nice to see you, sir. I hear, I think our room of volunteers next door, Veronica Volk, because this is a big day for WXXI. It's a big week. It's pledge week. Nice to see you in studio.
Here, nice Veronica. To see you too, Evan.
And let me also welcome Randy Gordman, who is in studio with us, our news director, because, as I mentioned, we do have volunteers, and there's a reason for that, Randy.
And there is a reason for that, and that is to continue the kind of programming that not only you do here, which is so excellent here on Connections, but we're going to talk about the podcast this hour. And that involved a lot of resources from both organizations, both the WXXI, of course, and the Democrat and Chronicle. From our standpoint, it meant me being able to free up Veronica to work on some other projects, which I could not have done had we not had staff to handle some of the other duties. And that's all part of why we need folks right now to think about what they're hearing, if they're enjoying this new world of podcasting, which is increasingly becoming a part of the media landscape. You can make a contribution by calling 454-6300, 454-6300, or just go online, wxxi.org/give. That's wxxi.org/give. And again, this is just an important part of what we're doing. You know, the podcast has been getting a lot of buzz on social media and just overall in town right now. A lot of people just have told me, hey, you know, I'm really interested in this story. But again, Evan, it's the kind of thing that we can't devote the kinds of resources. We've got Juan Vasquez, who works on the website of things, a lot of other folks here in the building who you may not see necessarily on the web pages named, but they are working behind the scenes. Again, it all costs money to do that, but we need support to continue to do the kinds of excellent work that Gary and Veronica are doing.
The rumor I heard this morning was that when my son went in for a strep throat check, one of the doctors in the clinic is a huge Connections fan and contributes because of the show. And so I would just say, if you agree with our wonderful doctor for my son, we'd love for you to call 454-6300, especially if you're a first-time donor, because we need those, don't we, Randy? I mean, most of our listeners don't donate.
First time sustaining, if you just want to do, you know, $5-$10 a month and that kind of thing, it's very easy to do. They can take all the information from you. Whatever you can afford to do is just that much more resource that we can devote to projects like this.
All right, 454-6300. Thank you, Randy Gordman, our news director from WXXI News. Veronica Volk and Gary Craig have been working on Finding Tammy Jo, the podcast that just launched. Well, I guess since when, Veronica, when do you think of as the start of that partnership?
See, we actually have a very specific date because Gary and I were on a panel on your show, Evan, when we were discussing the future of journalism. And it was then that podcasting kind of came up. It was something we were both interested in. I know, Gary, it's something that you said you wanted to get involved in.
Yeah, at that point, I was thinking actually of one on Charlie Tan, and Veronica are talking about the irony last night that the day the podcast launches is the same day Charlie Tan shows up on Dateline. And Veronica had the idea of the Tammy Jo story, which actually, as soon as she said it, to me, it was such a story worth telling, and it fit so well into the format.
Well, I want to ask Veronica why she was moved by that story in a moment, but let me follow up on that point with you, Gary. You said this makes sense in this format for anyone who might think, is this fair to the victim? You know, is this a good idea? Does this sensationalize? You know, I know those comments or questions come up, especially as people are sort of new to the podcast world. What do you say to those questions?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, we had this conversation a little on Twitter just last night, and I made the point that law enforcement has been very supportive. The family, the surviving family of Tammy Jo, and friends have been very supportive. And I think that goes back to the second point I want to make. It depends on how you approach the story and how you want to tell the story. And you know, Veronica has been insistent from day one that a big part of this story is just who is Tammy Jo. Not that she just ended up an unidentified murder victim, but who was this teenage girl? And I think if you're telling the story, if you're going at it with an empathy and trying to tell sort of a fair, objective story that gets just beyond the whodunit and, you know, this sad story of a dead body in a field, that people realize that and you know, eventually, once they realize that, they start to become part of the process and are willing to open up and tell you what they know.
And Veronica, I have to say, I admire that about you, because one of the knocks on media, and again, this is probably just a generalized knock on media, is that we report too much on numbers. We don't tell real human stories. This was a human tragedy that didn't have answers for years. But what specifically told you that you wanted to learn more and that you thought a podcast made sense?
Well, for me, it was my relationship with Tammy Jo. I mean, she's such a person to me, and she was so relatable to me. I was a 15-year-old girl, you know, so it was easy to see myself in her. And the way that the story captivated people in the area was so intriguing to me. The way people have been keeping up the gravesite of an unidentified girl for over three decades. The way the sheriff of a rural county has been dogged about this case since day one, and the emotion with which he speaks about it, it all, you know, converged to really intrigue me. And also, there was a disconnect between what happened to this girl and all the years later that she was finally identified. I wanted to find where that disconnect was. I wanted to know what it was about this case that made her identification so hard to come by.
Later, after we listen to the podcast, which runs about 10 minutes, yeah, we'll spend the rest of the hour, again, talking process and what comes next here. But is it possible, is it part of your hope that this kind of work produces more, sheds more light on who, not only who Tammy Jo was, but who was involved here?
Absolutely. I think, and we've spoken to John York about this, Sheriff John York of Livingston County, that the more people hear about this, the better the odds are that someone's going to hear about it that knows something. And of course, it's a grandiose idea, and I have some reservations about that, but that would be why I went into this, is maybe we can get the message out there. What do you say to that, Gary?
Well, no, I agree, and it's been fascinating even before the launch of the first podcast yesterday, because you know we've been sort of promoting it over the last few weeks via social media, that we've both heard from people with knowledge of parts of the story elsewhere in the country. I mean, it's stuff that the police, we found out, have largely heard, I think. But just it was fascinating to me that already, even before the podcast officially aired, just sort of the promotion and talking about it was bringing response to us from people who had information.
All right, so our listeners are saying, can we get to it? Can we hear the first installment? A little bit of background. It's going to be weekly installments. Veronica, do we know exactly how many yet? Do we have an
idea?
Yeah,
well, we are going to have 7 pre-produced segments, the first of which we'll hear right now. And they move chronologically through time. So this first one will be transported back to the first day, the start of the case, and kind of move forward in time from there, and kind of cover a different segment, a different section of time, and also involve different people who were involved in the case.
Okay, and so I guess it officially dropped yesterday. It's going to be Sundays?
Yes.
Going forward, so new installments every Sunday.
Yeah, we had a little bit of technical difficulties yesterday.
Well,
but
you didn't. SoundCloud did.
Well, they have been resolved is the point. Yeah. And the podcast is available to be downloaded on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.
Subscribe.
Right, subscribe. And you can also go to the website, findingtammyjo.com.
And if you're on the website, I thought a remarkable amount of work has gone into the website, not just hosting the sound, but Gary, also a little bit of background in terms of other materials, right?
Yes, we've been working hard to pull together sort of an archive of material, whether it's old stories, whether it's photos. You know, Veronica and I went out with one of our photographers, Max Schulte, and Wes Clements, whom you'll hear from shortly, to the field again, and sort of did what's known as a 360 sort of panoramic video to try to give people a sense of what that looks like currently. And each weekly episode will have sort of new material like that added to the website.
All right. So let me just say one time, and then I won't embarrass Veronica and certainly Gary, but I will say I am I am amazed at the work that has gone into this. For anybody who thought this was exploitive or anything else, the empathy, the hours of personal time, months of work, not knowing what it's going to produce, and here it is. And I will also address the elephant in the room, people saying, is this another serial? Listen, if you liked Serial, particularly season one, please don't miss this. But this is not Serial. This isn't a Serial knockoff. In many ways, this is the anti-Serial, because Serial was about who killed Hay, but you didn't get a whole lot of Hay. This is about the victim here. Veronica, is that fair?
Yeah, I'm nodding for people who can't see. That was really important to me, is that Serial is a lot about Adnan. And, you know, other true crime dramas, what was it, Making of a Murderer, The Jinx, they are about the accused. And I didn't want this to be about the accused. In a lot of ways, we tell Tammy Jo's story through the people that interacted with her and the people that took part in it, but I wanted it to be about her and about her story.
I think of the, I guess, several million people who listen to Serial, if they all were able to encounter Finding Tammy Jo, the vast majority would be listening every single week in the same way. So Veronica set it up for us. This is a first installment.
Yeah, I think it speaks for itself, so I think we can just go ahead and play it.
All right.
I'm Veronica Volk, a reporter with WXXI News. And recently, I've been working a lot with this guy.
Hi, I'm Gary Craig with the Democrat and Chronicle. We've been reporting together on the story of a teenager murdered more than three decades ago. But as we've learned, there's so much more to this story and so many layers to explore.
The story involves a girl, maybe you've heard of her, who was found dead in a cornfield in western New York in the 1970s. At first, it feels like your typically over-sensationalized murder story. But if you scratch beneath the surface, as Gary and I did, you discover this entire network of interconnected people that all played a major role in this girl's story. Gary and I have been trying to fill in a lot of the blanks about the life of this girl and questioning just how she ended up murdered in a rural New York county.
With each interview we've done, this story's gotten more compelling and more intriguing. We've talked to people from across the country, from New York to Florida to California, and now we want to bring you their voices and their stories.
So that's what we're going to do. We'll tell a different part of this story and introduce different people involved in a new segment every week as part of this podcast series we're calling Finding Tammy Jo. You can follow the story with us by subscribing to the podcast, and we'll also have a bunch of old pictures and articles and videos on our website, findingtammyjo.com. I just want to say before we start that this is a story about a murder case, and it can get pretty intense, so it might not be suitable for young or sensitive listeners. Now, the story starts in a rural town about a half hour's drive from Rochester called Caledonia, in a cornfield on a cold, wet November morning.
I have not much to tell you other than what you can see back. It was all corn from here up to where the old Arrowbed Greenway was. We were going over our combine because we were supposed to come down here and start combine in this field that was in the corn at that time. And we decided to go down to the corner and get a cup of coffee, and that's when we noticed, you know, the body. And
this is Wes Clements. He still lives on the farm where all of this started. He's older now, but he still remembers this vividly.
We didn't know at first. Dad thought maybe it's some Halloween prank that floated off, or balloon, or, you know, whatever. And we got out and we walked out and saw what we saw and know just what everybody else knows today.
November 10th, 1979. Wes Clements and his dad, Harry, see something in their cornfield.
A lot of people don't look at cornfields. Being a farmer, that's what I do. So I was looking in the cornfield on the way by looking for a hunter.
They call the police. One of the first responders is John York.
I was not far away. I arrived on the scene. I met with Harry and his son as we walked to the area where ended up being Jane Doe was found. She was lying face down in a cornfield, somewhat off the road. about 20 yards, laying in the corn.
At first, he thought it was a hit and run, but he got closer and saw the gunshot wounds. She had two, one in the forehead and one in the back.
We secured the area and we began an investigation that we thought would be a very normal, what we found out, everything but normal homicide investigation.
Normal as in solvable. But even from that very first day, the odds were stacked against them. First, there was the rain.
The prior 11 hours, it had rained profusely. Everything on her was soaking wet. Everything around her was saturated.
Second, the location. A lot of people passed through on the highway she was found next to.
5 and 20 is a major, major truck route from Canada to the U.S. Across the road was a pull-off area where there's a large tree. We knew a lot of trucks had pulled off there and stopped.
And third, she had no identification.
This kid came from out of the area. I almost felt that from the get-go because we couldn't find any identification. I thought to myself, if you're going to strip her from identification, turn her pockets inside out, you know she's not from this area. You know we're going to have a tough time with this. I thought that in my head.
But there were a couple things that stood out, caught York's attention.
She had a halter top tan. So you knew you didn't wear a halter top in the Northeast in November and get a suntan. So she had to come from the Sun Belt someplace.
Most of the girl's clothes were pretty common, things you'd find in a department store. She did have these interesting keychains on her belt loops. One was a heart that said, "He who holds the key can open my heart." And the other was a key. But they were probably picked up from a little toy dispenser along the highway. But there was this jacket.
She did have one very unique piece of clothing. The jacket she wore was a red jacket with black stripes down the arm.
That we're going to talk about in a later episode. So despite finding next to nothing on the scene that day, York was still pretty confident they would solve this, figure out who she was and who killed her. But he didn't understand then just how long the case would stay with him.
To this day, when you talk about it, it kind of shocks me. I'm trying to even imagine, and I can't quite grasp it, just seeing sort of laid there in the field. I mean, do you still, all these years later, see that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Even after Vietnam.
Wes Clements, he was also rattled that day. The police brought both him and his dad in for questioning. They asked him about the girl, about the cornfield where they found her, about the condition she was in. They even had the two of them give shoe prints. Eventually, both Wes and his father were cleared. They weren't suspects in the case. But still, it's not the kind of day you ever forget.
You know, like I said, it's just something that's never gone out of my mind and never will. It's been just over 6 years now since my dad passed, and he succumbed to cancer. But, you know, with all the technology and everything that was out there, he says, like, just can't believe they, you know, like, you see all these TV programs, you just can't believe we haven't found who that girl is yet. And here we are.
He'd seen a lot of death in his life, but not just on the farm where he worked.
Up to that point, in 79, we'd lost several family members. My mother passed in 71, and my grandfather the year before that, and then my mother's mother, and my dad's mom passed the year before that. Since then in my life, I've seen some things I'd rather not talk about, and you know, you just live. But, you know, I don't know, it's just my nature, I guess.
Gary, when did you first hear about this story?
It happened, you know, well before I got to the Democrat and Chronicle. So I came here in 90, but as the years went on, you'd start seeing these anniversary stories about Jane Doe, and, you know, it was such a fascinating and tragic story that I followed it, reading other reporters' work for years until the latest developments.
What did you find particularly fascinating about it?
It sounds probably counterintuitive, but it's a It's both a tragic and ugly story and an uplifting story in some ways. Tragic and ugly in that you have this, you know, young teenager shot and left in a field dead, and nobody knows who she is. And you know, just a brutal, heinous crime. And but the uplifting part of it, the other side, is how even though nobody knew who she was, this community embracing of her, the way they sort of took to her, and both on the law enforcement end, which really was just diligent and, you know, vigorous for so long, and the community that took her on as if they were one of their own.
A young girl was found murdered in a small rural town. Naturally, people started to talk, and the tips started coming in. John York became the lead investigator on the case, and he tracked them down one by one. He starts with the last person to see the girl alive. That's next time on Finding Tammy Jo. I'm Veronica Volk, WXXI News.
And I'm Gary Craig with the Democrat and Chronicle.
Of first installment there of Finding Tammy Jo. Veronica and Gary are with me in studio. You want to call the program, react to what you just heard. You have questions about the process of putting the podcast together, questions about how this season will kind of lay out going forward, or anything you want to weigh in, you can do that. You can call toll-free 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The conversation continues next. Coming up in our second hour, it's our monthly science roundtable. We're looking at electric and self-driving cars. Essentially, it's the future of the automobile when it comes to technology. What does Elon Musk have up his sleeve? Would you pay $35,000 for a Tesla? Do you even want a self-driving car? Are they reliable? We're going to look at the technology and the future next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And before we continue our discussion of Finding Tammy Jo and the launch of this podcast, Randy Gorbin's here. I should also mention that you can watch on WXXI News Facebook feed, a Facebook page, Facebook Live. So, hi, if you're watching on Facebook. Randy, all these new technologies out there, but we need listener support to make it go.
And I won't mention any dollar figure, but Juan came to me in the newsroom and said, you know, we could use some equipment for this sort of thing. And I said, well, you know, we'll see if we can fit that in the budget. And that's the sort of thing that it's not like we're flush with cash around here, but we do depend on donations from listeners who, you know, listen to Connections every day, both here, of course, and in the Geneva area and all through the Finger Lakes and the greater Rochester area. You can make a donation to support the new technologies that we are employing, just as a lot of cutting edge media are doing these days, by calling 454-6300. That's 454-6300. Or you can go to WXXI.org/give, WXXI.org/give, a safe, secure way to make your donation. And again, the podcast that you've been talking about this hour, it took staff, it took Veronica, it took me being able to shift some people around the newsroom so she could spend more time on this. It meant extra hours for other people. There's constantly, as you can imagine, you know, technology you buy today is almost obsolete by tomorrow, in a sense, because so many things are happening now. But we put out, I think, some excellent programming, not only podcasting, but on air. You listen to Evan's show, and some of the guests you've had just in recent days, Evan, everybody from Tom Golisano to talking about the issue of the landfill controversy in the Finger Lakes, the Flint water crisis, what implications it has for our area. Great programming on Connections. And again, we brought Evan here from Channel 13 a few years ago, and has done an incredible job, really, bringing up the level of the discourse we have here. But again, everything that we do, producer, everything takes money, so we need your help right now. 454-6300, whatever you can give, we appreciate it, and thanks for listening.
All right, thank you very much, Randy Gorbin, news director from WXXI. Talking podcasting and WXXI and the Democrat and Chronicle, entering into this partnership with the launch of Finding Tammy Jo. You just heard the first installment, and I hope that you subscribe and listen every week when they drop on Sundays. And Veronica, this partnership, that we can't stress that word enough, I guess. Farrah?
Yeah, I'm so glad that Randy talks about that. I know we're in pitch mode over here because it's pledge week, but this really wouldn't have been possible if we didn't have, if me and Gary and I both didn't have, you know, managers and editors who were really willing to take a risk on this. And it is kind of a grand experiment. Last night in our Twitter chat, I called it a labor of love.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll see how it goes and we'll see how people react to it. I do hope that we get some responses here on the show, but it's really thanks to this partnership and thanks to the people kind of behind the scenes working so hard. We have Juan right now doing Facebook Live video. All these things wouldn't, you know, this podcast, the end product wouldn't have happened without everyone's help. So shout out to everyone. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah, I second that completely. It's just, I mean, obviously just the two of us started talking at day one about how to do this, and it sort of grew from there. And so many people in both shops have been involved in bringing this to reality.
I just want to read a couple of comments. Matt writes to us on Twitter saying that knowing that Tammy Jo was thousands of miles from family, scared and alone haunts me. Thank you for telling her story. And I see the phone ringing now. You want to weigh in? It's 844-295-TALK, toll free 844-295-8255. Another comment. Hold on one second. Sorry, guys. Just an email from a listener named Jack. Who just says, numb with what I just heard. But why don't we tell victim stories like this all the time? Why do we need special podcasts? Fair question, Jack. Gary Craig, you want to weigh in on that?
No, I think he has a truly good question there. I mean, I think both shops, we probably do some reporting on crime victims. You know, sadly, there are more than we have time to report on.
Yep.
But it is important whenever you do it, I believe, that as we've stressed here already, that you humanize the person and see them as more than just a victim. And that's what we've really tried to do here. And I think it is a lesson for us in reporting on crime victims in general.
And let me also mention, wow, it's pledge. We've mentioned several times it's pledge, didn't we? I see I've got the pledge screen up here. I'm going to switch over and I'm going to find out who's on the phone because I see the phone's ringing. So if you're waiting to talk to Veronica and Gary about the podcast, hang in there for one more minute and I will switch it over here. Or maybe Juan can. You're not doing anything, are you, Juan? Come on over here and help me out.
I want to kind of add to Gary said. I think that this story in particular also... Crime stories are important because they expose some issues maybe in public safety and the justice system. And through our reporting of this, we found one, at least, persistent issue is the identification of these unknown victims. There was a major disconnect between, you know, for lack of a better word, bodies that were found without any names attached to them and these missing persons databases. And luckily, there were people in this particular case working on their own time to try to connect those dots. But there are thousands of these cases out there. This is just one example.
I'm really glad Veronica mentioned that. That's very true. And one of the episodes and you know, later on is going to focus on that point. And it's getting better, obviously, now with the internet and the way people can look online and find information, as ultimately happened with Tammy Jo. But it's unbelievable the number of cases there are like this of unidentified bodies that are found and then missing people who have not been found.
All right, Gary in Rochester, first up on the phones. Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to mention that I am a regular listener to This American Life with Ira Glass and of course, their spinoff, Serial with Sarah Koenig. And I listened to the podcast, Tammy Jo, last night, and I would compliment Gary and Veronica that the quality is as good as it is from those two programs. What my question is, and I would make a comment on, is one of the criticisms of journalism in the recent past is with the rise of electronic journalism and social media, that journalism has lacked in-depth reporting that the print media has. And I'm wondering if podcasting isn't the next step in an evolution to fill that void that people have been looking for from the in-depth print media and journalism to electronic. And if we're not going to see more of this in the future, where people will get their in-depth reporting in the podcast manner. Thanks.
Gary, thanks for the phone call, and that is huge praise, by the
way.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
And Gary Craig, I'm going to start with you. What do you think about his comments there on whether this is part of the future of in-depth reporting?
Well, I see his point. I mean, obviously there's a depth of narrative and storytelling that you can get to with this that you can't with some other. But I believe right now, let's face it, in the media, we're all kind of searching for that vehicle that you can find that people will grasp onto and listen to the story you want to tell or the investigation you want to do. And while podcasting, I believe, will become one of those outlets, I don't see it as sort of the singular one. I think we'll still radio documentaries, radio broadcasts, TV documentaries, print. I believe they all have a place, and I think, but at the same time, because the industry is in a little bit of an upheaval now, we're trying to find those different vehicles that perhaps people will grasp onto. And I think there's going to be more than podcasting, but that's clearly one of them.
And obviously, I'm a little bit biased towards audio storytelling, just, my background in public media. But I think Gary makes an excellent point. And you can see an example of that just by going to the website. FindingTammyJo.com isn't just a podcast. We have a ton of visual elements, ton of video elements that really enhance the story and are just kind of an all-encompassing way of telling it.
But it's a great question, Gary. And I would just add from my own perspective, if podcasting were to take the lead in in-depth reporting, there would be a problem. But I don't see that happening. I mean, the Democrat and Chronicle is still producing remarkable journalism on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis. We believe we are at WXXI. Without giving away too much, we're a few weeks away from rolling out a series of reports that producer Megan Mack and I have been working on in conjunction with some other people in this building that I think will have a lot of people talking when it comes to, well, I don't want to give away too much. I would just say that there's a lot going on, and it's a great question, but I think podcasting is a great supplement where it works. And, not every podcast is going to be in a week-to-week. I mean, Veronica, this works as week-to-week for a lot of reasons, but not everyone's a week-to-week, right?
Right. And I don't want to get too in the weeds about this, but even the term podcast can be problematic because are we talking about the content to the end user, or are we talking about on-demand audio content in general? I mean, the story that we told, the podcast that we have, is I think a specific brand of audio storytelling. It's a narrative, it's scripted, it has musical elements. That doesn't apply to all podcasts. Your show is available in podcast form, even though it's live on the radio.
And I always say that is, it's true, but that's really just putting the show on the web, which is great. I mean, giving people audio access. When I hear the word podcast, I think of more original content creation as opposed to rebroadcast. That's just sort of where my mind goes. I think of more Weekend Connections, which is the podcast that producer Megan Mack and I put together. At the end of every week, we take a look at the week that just was in Connections, and we put together 15 to 20 minutes of sort of highlights, and she and I kind of talking in the middle of them, introducing them. That is its own standalone podcast. And by the way, if you haven't checked that out, I don't know what you're waiting for, but this is podcast hour. But maybe I'm wrong. Is there another term we should be using? Do you prefer a different term, Veronica?
I don't, but that's only because I'm not creative enough to make one up on my own.
And I'm the same way. To me, it's just, as Veronica said, it's pretty much audio storytelling. And just a very quick story that I told Veronica the other day. I sometimes teach at RAT a course on media coverage of crime. And I used to do this experiment with the students where I would take, which we just had, I think, one of the anniversaries coming up, with the Hindenburg disaster. And there was an incredible New York Times story, I believe, the day after, which was just an amazing piece of writing for something, caught at the spot. There was, of course, there was video of it, and there was the infamous sort of radio broadcast, which is sometimes overlaid over the video. And I had the students sort of go through each one and decide which they found more compelling. And inevitably, different classes, it was the radio broadcast. And there's some stories to me, I don't know what it is, there's some stories that just told as through radio, through audio vehicles, there's just something more compelling and rich and robust about them.
Let me grab another phone call. This is Janice in Pittsford. Go ahead, Janice.
Hi. I thought that the podcast was done really beautifully. I'm calling as somebody who's very interested in seeing the news industry strengthened, and I just wondered if you have, at this point, any numbers on how many people have listened to it. Is it something that's drawing people in?
Well, we just got a few tens of thousands. But it's a great question. I guess downloads, et cetera.
I mean, I think right now, I mean, I can speak of what we do know, obviously. There's some of the vehicles we're using where I don't think we're going to be able to get a good handle. We obviously sort of chart metrics, at the newspaper. And throughout the day yesterday, I was looking at what we have, and it seemed to be I thought doing very well. I mean, I can't give you hard numbers. And, you know, and just and the feedback, I mean, it's anecdotal, obviously, but throughout the day, I think we both were hearing from people via email, via Twitter, et cetera.
But
as far as real hard numbers, I can't give them. But at least, you know, the quote metrics, as we call them, at least it looked pretty promising for the first day. And we hope, obviously, that we will build from there.
Veronica, is there a number or
so
goal in mind?
So the last time I checked, and this is according to SoundCloud, which as we know is not always working properly, it was over 1,000 listens. But even the term listens is problematic. And this speaks to a whole other issue in the podcasting industry that people are still kind of figuring out, is whether to measure listening metrics by downloads, by listens. I mean, if you click a SoundCloud file and you press play for 5 seconds, that's a listen. But would I, as a producer and as a reporter, think that someone had a good example of the story I was telling? Not in 5 seconds. So, I mean, I think that what Gary said is true. Anecdotally, we've been getting an awesome response, and we'll be able to kind of get a better sense for how many people are hearing it, I think, in as this project continues.
It sounds really good. I tweeted to you guys yesterday. I could have listened to a lot longer, and you know, you said you were kind of thinking about, you know, not needlessly stretching out the story or...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That is kind of one of the main criticisms that we've heard, and as far as criticisms go, that's, I think, a good one to have.
Somebody else just jumped on Twitter to say the same thing. Will the weekly podcast be longer than the first one's 10 minutes? Yes, please.
Well, I'll repeat what I said on Twitter last night, which is that as a producer, I didn't want to just put more content in for the sake of having a longer episode. I think that the episode that we have is well served in terms of how fast-paced the story goes and the voices that we include and what we do with it.
Yeah, I believe that the criticism that we've heard has been promising that it should be longer. And actually, right before I came over here, I was on the phone with somebody in law enforcement whom we've spoken with about this case, and their mother had listened to it somewhere and had the same complaint that it was too short. I wanted to hear more.
Well, I think if you're accustomed to living or listening to podcasts, you have grown to expect something that's more, you know, 45 minutes or something. I listen to them when I go for a walk or I'm cleaning the house or something like that. So maybe that's, you know, it's like the expectation of your typical podcast listener.
I totally understand. We also wanted to create this in a way that wouldn't be, I guess, hard for somebody who hadn't listened to podcasts to interact with before either, though. Mm-hmm. We wanted people who had never listened to podcasts to be able to come to this and maybe not be overwhelmed by the length of the content. I mean, for somebody who doesn't listen to podcasts, it can be a little bit sitting, listening, not really sure how to kind of experience this. But I mean, you're right. I think that we've left ourselves open to having kind of a fluctuating length throughout the season.
Oh, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. It's definitely, each episode is variable in what we tell.
Are you allowed to tell us the second episode that drops this coming Sunday? How long?
I'm not quite sure. I think it might be about the same length.
I think
it's similar.
I couldn't tell you down to the second, but I think it is similar. It might be about 10 minutes.
Okay. But it's very good, that I can say.
Well, I think it shows great restraint that someone like Veronica, who knows the podcast world better than anybody I personally know, is very aware as an editor not to add content just for the sake of saying, well, there's no rules, so let's make this 25 minutes or make this 30. And that's not what Janice is saying. I think Janice is saying that content was so good, I could have taken more. And that should really, I think, be flattering to Veronica and Gary. But that's what's so interesting about this format. When Gary called in, a different Gary, the caller earlier, who said, is this part of the future of longer form journalism? The lack of rules, Veronica, it's like this canvas that in many ways we've never had before. And I find that totally interesting to see how one person decides to work with that canvas and how another person might go longer and might be shorter with this person.
Right. We'll see how long that lasts. I mean, it's only been a little while, I guess, since news organizations have been using podcasts, and already there are some rules developing. I mean, people who listen to podcasts obviously have some expectations for how long they should be and what format they should be in. But I think that we had a lot of freedom with this, which I think really helped the end product.
All right, listeners, you want to come back into the conversation? 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Finding Tammy Joe is the podcast. It is launched now. It is going to be at least 7 installments. And the interesting thing is I'm very curious over the next 7 weeks to see what other developments happen that might impact it, in the same way we've seen other week-to-week podcasts be affected by developments when people are listening. So at least 7 weeks, dropping on Sundays. Hope that you're subscribing. Veronica and Gary are in studio with us telling us about the creation. And let's talk a little bit about some of the criticism. Hasn't been a whole lot. There's been a lot of praise and a lot of appreciation from the community. But there are always critics. And some of the few complaints I've seen have been along the lines of, this is insensitive. This is hurtful to a family. You know, you are telling a dramatic story about someone who was murdered at the age of 15, and some people don't like that. So I'll start with you, Gary.
Sure. I mean, I think if people stay tuned in, they'll realize how off base that criticism is, because some of the voices they're going to hear are, you know, the sister of Tammy Jo, who was instrumental in her identification, the best friend of Tammy Jo, who was instrumental in some of her identification, and if you saw the story we did yesterday, we included some letters that Tammy Jo had written to the friend, which she shared with us, because they were, I think they saw our commitment to basically making Tammy Jo more than just a dead body found in a field. And I mean, if they were here, I think they would tell you just the opposite as far as this being insensitive. I think it's been very sensitive to the memory of Tammy Jo and, you know, to those who know her.
Veronica?
I just second that. I couldn't say it any better than that. And I defer to Gary for all criticism because he has a little bit of a thicker skin than I do.
Well, and you're,
I've had many more years.
I was going to say, I mean, it's fair to say Gary has tremendous experience in the field. And these kind of complaints come up almost inevitably when there are victims. And I don't say that to put down people who have those kind of complaints. I mean, that is a very sensitive and well-intended kind of complaint. But the point Gary's making is you're going to hear more. In fact, let me ask both of you, you know, without giving away the store here, you've got a lot of the work of the season done and in process. And we just heard today in the first episode, you know, some very interesting voices, Wes Clements, Jack York, who is this incredible, really, really amazing guy and very emotional. But what are some? Who are some of the other voices that you can tell us a little bit about, maybe, Veronica, Gary, that we're going to start hearing from?
Well, I guess sort of thinking chronologically along the way, you'll hear from the waitress who's believed to have seen Tammy Jo at the diner, and there's very good evidence that she did before the death. And we were surprised because really she had not been spoken to in, I think, 30-plus years, it sounds like. And, you know, we found her and talked to her, and she was really good with us. I mean, you're going to hear, as we mentioned, from the sister, from the friend, obviously from law enforcement folks who've been, I believe, very supportive of the project and believe, if anything, it could help them along, just as Veronica said earlier. But there's, and then the internet community that was part of this with figuring out who the girl was is also, you'll hear their voices. And we have Deborah Halber, who wrote the book The Skeleton Crew, which is about this very issue about how there's this new world of sort of internet sleuths who spend their time figuring out unidentified bodies and match them with missing people. We have Deborah Halber on, who's really sort of a scholar of this issue.
Veronica?
Yeah, we also had the opportunity, of course, to talk with, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but
you don't have to give it away.
We had the opportunity to speak with an old boyfriend of Tammy's, who she references in the letters, and this is obviously somebody who was very close to her that I think was able to give a much fuller picture of her and tell more of her story, which, like I said, has been my motivation along.
Gary, you wrote this weekend a little bit more about the letters and some of the sentiment that they convey and some of the mystery that we're going to be experiencing with Tammy Jo. And I say not mystery in a way to sort of cheaply sell it, but honestly, there's not a snug, easy story. This wasn't a 15-year-old girl who was obviously troubled, going to run away, probably going to end up in some kind of trouble. There are some sometimes seeming contradictions that seem to play out.
Very much. I mean, she sort of, you know, at one point I wrote in the story this line, but then I decided it was unfair and took it out to tell you the truth. But yet at the same time, I had called her you know, sort of juvenile yet jaded. But I'm not really sure if jaded is an accurate description, but yet she's this sort of, to a degree, not as worldly as she perhaps believes herself to be. But, you know, she's hitchhiking across the country at age 15, while yet when you read her letters, they're sort of the, you know, you're not surprised that this is the writing of a 15-year-old girl. You might be surprised that this is the writing of a 15-year-old girl who, for some reason, is escaping a household that appears to be very troubled and is fleeing this household and is going across the country. I mean, there's this sort of exuberance in the letters and this liveliness in the letters, but at the same time, you know from talking to her sister and others, and sadly what we know befell her, is that she was trying to get away from something. So there is this sort of, as you said, this contradiction that's really hard to reconcile.
Veronica, do you want to weigh in on some of the personality of this girl? Because you said earlier this hour, one of the things that moved you about her story was the fact that, you know, you might not have been exactly like her, but you were a 15-year-old girl once. You understood certain things about her and connected in certain ways.
Yeah, well, also, in reporting about Tammy, you get the sense that she was the kind of person that made that connection with a lot of people. She was an exuberant, gregarious teenager. Her sister said that she never met a stranger. Her friend said that people were drawn to her. It was, you know, across the board, everyone we talked to. And what's so fascinating about that is that it carried over. Once her life had ended, she was still able to connect with people, even when people didn't know who she was, which is so fascinating.
Alexis, an email from Alexis just wants to know, she said, great work. Who did the actual interviews in the field? Well, there's two of you, Veronica and Gary. Can you talk about the process?
Yeah, we both did. We both did interviews in the field as well as over the phone. A lot of audio engineering on my part and a lot of reporting, I'd say, on both of our parts.
Yeah, and that was the beauty, I think, with the interviews, and that you really realize how good it is to have kind of two minds and two perspectives, because, you know, I think different questions were coming from us because of that, and it sort of gave us a fuller picture, a more whole picture.
Veronica, was it easy or difficult to work with Gary, because he's the most ego-free person I think I've ever met in media for someone with his achievements, and there are times where you probably wanted him to say, hey, tell me where this script is off, were there times where you thought, wow, this is the easiest person to work with.
I'm going to get a little bit mushy here, and I'm just going to say that the opportunity to work with Gary has been incredibly educational, and I know that that's kind of a weird word to use, but throughout this process, I just feel like our work has complemented each other, and that it turned out to be a better project because we were able to work together and bring our strengths together. I mean, I have only been reporting here at WXXI for a year and a half. I was new to the story. I was new to the station when the story started for me. And of course, Gary's been in the area for longer, and he's been reporting on this on this beat for longer. So we were both able to kind of bring our own strengths.
Well, there are only so many times in history where you can put something like peanut butter and chocolate together, or like chocolate chip cookies and milk, and you go, that's just made for each other. The Volk Craig thing, I mean, it's going to go down in history. I'm glad to know you met really on my show, that I get some credit there. But Gary, this is
journalism.
I want to ask you, Gary. Yes. I mean, Veronica's value to our newsroom is not just as a reporter, no, but as somebody who sees the podcasting and media landscape in a way that many of us, even if we study, it's in her DNA more than it is most people. And my guess is you've probably learned a little from Veronica.
Oh, trust me. I mean, talk about getting mushy. Both not only just in the storytelling and her, as I said from the outset, her empathy and sincerity for this story is what captured me and said, yes, you know, let's do this. And then down to sort of the more nuts and bolts, I can tell you if I continue to talk as quickly in recording as I do, she's eventually going to throw something at me one day, I think.
Veronica, you're also being seen by people on Facebook, on our WXXI News Facebook page, if you're watching on Facebook Live.
Interesting behind-the-scenes note was that, yes, we did do a lot of vocal coaching with Gary, but I think it paid off.
Oh, it's no question about it. And I echo what Janice and what some of our other callers have said about the quality of the podcast. We're down to about our last 2 minutes. So if you missed the podcast earlier, there's a website that not only allows you to listen to the Finding Tammy Jo podcast, but there are essentially extras. There are articles, background information, pictures, there will be video, things like that. But what's the website, guys?
FindingTammyJo.com.
Simple as that. And then on Sunday, if you missed Veronica's little tease at the end of the first episode, tell people what they're going to hear on Sunday when the next one drops, Veronica. Well, little bit. I mean, they tell the whole story.
So the next story involves the last person who may have seen Tammy alive, which, as we said, was a waitress at a diner in Lima.
Okay.
That's all I'm giving you.
And there you go. And Gary Craig, yes. I want to wrap with this focus for you. You have developed relationships with law enforcement for years. And my guess is, and Veronica has sort of said as much in the newsroom, whether directly or I just overheard her saying how valuable that has been. But they also had to try to understand, what exactly are you doing? I mean, podcasting is still new to a lot of people. And for the listeners who had doubts, you say law enforcement has embraced this effort, yes?
Oh, very much. Matter of fact, the person whom I mentioned talked about her mother texted me as we're sitting here saying, you're talking about my mother on the air? The person whose mother said it was too short. but yes, no, they've been, I think they see the value of it, and they see, again, to use the word, the sincerity, the storytelling. And I think for their purposes, that's all good.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound schmaltzy, but I promise the listening audience, this is not about download numbers or how many clicks or whatever you want to create in metrics. These are two reporters who are working together because they care about the story, they care about the person, and who knows what comes out of this, but this is a story that is still developing, and I'm going to stay with it for the next 7 weeks and beyond, I suspect. And I suspect a lot of people who heard the first episode this hour on the podcast will as well. Congratulations, Gary Craig and Veronica Volk, on this work, and cannot wait to see what else you can do with this. Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Evan.
Veronica.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll be back maybe when it's over.
FindingTammyJo.com. You can book that. That is a return engagement, no question about it. And again, subscribe to the podcast. Short break, monthly Science Roundtable's next.